I'm twisted, sorry. I'm kind of new to the stand-up scene, so I've been listening to a lot of Pandora stand-up to help prepare me, and I've gotten some great tips from the pros. So one thing I noticed that they all do is they come out and they ask the audience how they're doing. So how are you guys doing tonight? You don't need to answer, I just had to ask. Another thing I noticed is that a lot of them have a catchphrase, so I'm leaning towards am I right, ladies? So be on the lookout for that in the next one. Am I right, ladies? And the third thing I notice is that they will share something personal about themselves. So I'm doing a dating project right now. I will be going on a date with every single person in the audience tonight. I'm just kidding. I'm actually doing this thing where I go on 50 first dates in a year. Part of the reason I'm doing it is because I've never been a good dater. I was always in long relationships back to back. I kind of always dated the way lesbians do on the second date we were moving in together. So I started this project last spring, and I've had 38 first dates so far.
Oh, nice. You.
Yeah, it's a full-time job. It's so easy to date in LA, am I right, ladies? A professional extra on True Blood who was very passionate about it. One guy who had just moved into a one-bedroom apartment with five other guys. I don't know, maybe they'll mention that on the first date. A coffee expert, that wasn't his job, it was just a claim. There was one guy that I went out with that had a tattoo of his naked ex-wife on the side of his torso, true story. And my first thought was, how am I going to take this guy to pool parties? Hey guys, this is Eric. And that's his ex-wife. So last year, I decided to believe in magic, and I do. So that worked out.
And now, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
I can wash out 44 pairs of socks and have them hanging out on the line. I can start an iron 2 dozen shirts before you can count from 1 to 9. I can scoop up a great big dipper full of lard from the drippings can. Throw up the skillet, go out and do my shopping, be back before it melts in the pan. Cause I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. I'll say it again.
Sitting in for Dean and Phil are Karen Foreman and Lily Holloman.
Hello there. Welcome to your Chick Pack.
Hey.
Hey.
Happy
Hollywood
accidents.
Hour. Dean Haglund, your host, has moved to Australia, so we've taken over.
Ha ha ha.
Just kidding. Actually, we're just subbing in. Don't worry. It's all good. Phil's still swimming to Australia, and I get reports that he's fine. He's a little sunburned, but he's just docked on the island of Yap, which is a bucket list item for me.
Oh my gosh,
poo-poo
he's there
Phil for going
you.
Without
What's
me.
Up, Phil
wasn't willing to swim.
He's communing with me.
What can I say? I'm Lily Holloman.
Hello, Lily Holloman.
Hi. This is Karen Foreman over here.
Yep, that's me.
Who you just heard do some stand-up comedy.
I did. I was standing when I told those jokes, and I was at the Comedy Store, and I was in a fabulous show, by the way, that's called the C Word Show. And C stands for comedy, not the other word that you might have thought about. But it is run by three women who are awesome and hilarious comics. One of them, her name is Jody Miller, and she was my stand-up teacher last fall, and she's the best. And I love their show. It's a very classy show. They have great people on it. And so... That's what that was.
So tell me about this dating project. Did you wrap that up?
You know, it's all wrapped up, and not doing it anymore, but I was doing it last year. It was my project for 2014, and it was amazing. It was a life-changing project, and all those stories are true, by the way, and I have so many more stories than I told there that I just... you know, couldn't tell all of them as it would have taken so long. And also had very good stories. They weren't all like ridiculous dating stories. I met some amazing people and so.
No love connections?
There were a couple of possibilities that just didn't, it turned out not to be the right fit, but I did meet a lot of really great people. So when people or women complain about there's no men to date in LA, I can now firmly say that I have the evidence that that is not true. I met some good quality people. You just never know who you're going to be attracted to, Lily, or not, as the case may be.
Can you divulge one additional story?
Yes, I can. So, I don't know if this sounds really bad, but I met this guy who had 17 Van Morrison albums. Now, I don't have 17 of anything. I don't even have 17 pairs of underwear, and that's a necessity. So I felt like that was excessive. I know that's judgmental on my part, but it feels like a legitimate judgment. Am I right, ladies?
Hey, I think you're right. Was it vinyl, CD, MP3?
I think you know what? I didn't even ask. Just when he said that, I was terrified. And in related news, don't meet someone at LACMA. Because it is a long date with someone you've never met before.
Oh, so this was one of his intro statements. The first thing you need to know about me is I have 17 Van Morrison.
It might as well have been. I mean, I was with him for approximately an hour, and he asked me what kind of music I liked. He was very sweet. He asked me lots of questions about myself. He was really into Van Morrison, and. Yeah, and it's not like I have anything against Van Morrison. I think overall what I got from this date was that he was not a very modern person.
Okay.
Not very contemporary, sure. Not hip, if you will, to the game.
And that's important to you.
Well, yeah, I guess it is. I'm trying not to sound like an a-hole, but sure, be hip.
Well, I mean, Karen, when I was 13 years old, my very first album, along with a Beatles album, was a Van Morrison album that
good
I purchased.
Good for you. That makes you so cool and awesome and hip. And also, by the way, thank you for your appreciation of brown-eyed girls, not being a brown-eyed person.
I have to say, though, that's my least favorite Van Morrison
well,
song.
Well, because it's been played 1,000
so
times.
So overplayed.
Oh, my God. That's
Please.
What the problem is, I think, with Van
yeah.
Morrison.
But he's got some good ones that haven't been overplayed, so you
that's
might want to revisit this guy.
You know what? Maybe
know.
I will. Maybe that's what that date was all about for me, really just the reintroduction to Van Morrison. Good to see you again, old friend.
The Chilpack Hollywood live event of the week.
So speaking of your stand-up comedy, you had a fresh, new, just out of the oven stand-up comedy show this past Saturday, June 20th at, it was called Three's Company and You're the Crowd.
Well, I did it with two friends of mine who also took Jody Miller's class. So we made a little poster and we actually imposed our faces on the Three's Company cast members because it happens to be another girl and another guy. And so but the poster said Three's Company and You're our crowd. And we made that like a little Facebook event. So that's why it said that the show itself was not called that at all.
Oh, okay.
It was this guy's show who he does shows at the Formosa, and the name of his shows or his group, I guess, I don't know, it's called Rebels of Comedy. So they host shows at the Federal Bar, which I've done, and then also at the Formosa Cafe, and it's super fun. And I had two other friends that were also in the show. It was great. I did all new material, so I was extremely nervous. Mm-hmm. But it went better than I could have imagined, so it was really great.
Oh, good.
It was real sweet.
Have you ever had bad crowds, like no laughs to little?
I did an open mic for the first time last weekend, which was horrible. I was only up literally for like a minute, and I had it. First of all, I went there. It took me 2 hours to get on stage. That whole entire 2 hours, I had butterflies in my stomach. Mm. I wasn't feeling very good at the that day because I was fighting something off that last week. And then I finally got up there and I just lost my nerve and it was crushing. And I went to my teacher for a little coaching because I was doing all this new material and I wanted her help. And she was like, Karen, that's why I tell everybody in my class, never do an open mic because they're soul-crushing experiences. So I've heard but I hear different things from different people. Some people are like huge believers in open mics. And my teacher then, she did say, if you do go to one, you have to not care. And unfortunately, I was not in that state of mind.
See, that's what I would do. I would do like the open mic in Simi Valley, not tell anybody. And see, it's like, is
idea.
This really funny? Is it really
But here's
funny?
The irony about that. Mm-hmm. If you do stand-up in Simi Valley, you can probably do a main stage show somewhere. Because my friend travels.
That's a good point.
She'll go like an hour outside of LA, and she will be
the headliner.
One of the like main people, and not have to bring people, which is the big thing in LA, is that when you start off as a stand-up, you're considered a bringer, so you have to bring audience members.
Mm-hmm.
Different shows require a different amount of people to be brought. The one I did at the Formosa is only like maybe 3 or 4 people. The Federal Bar, when I did that, that's like 8 to 10 people bringer show.
Whoa.
And I did one of those shows once, and one of the other comedians didn't bring anyone, and so he couldn't go up. He couldn't even do his act.
Yikes.
So it's
dog eat dog.
It's pretty intense, yeah. So I space my shows out because I don't want to burn out my friends.
Mm-hmm. I hear ya.
You know how it is.
Oh, I know how it is, girl.
Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay, I've been doing all the talking.
Well, speaking of burning out my friends, I do talk a lot about the Los Angeles Breakfast Club.
Yes, you do, but for good reason.
I do.
You have every right.
And it can burn out a certain person because it's at 7 a.m. in the morning on every Wednesday.
Well, those people need to adjust their sleeping schedules.
I think so. And for the people who respond, they love it.
Oh, no one has ever walked away from there upset or angry or wanting to punch somebody. If only from joy.
Anyways. Exactly. I punch people from joy all the time. So Tucker Smallwood, one of my favorite people, one of my favorite actor, a veteran of war.
Ooh.
In fact, both of these things. I have been trying to get him to perform at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club for a couple months now. And I finally emailed him. I said, Tucker, it's my birthday week, and there's nothing I would want more than to hear you read your memoir, play the blues, and talk about PTSD awareness at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club.
Oh, my God.
And he said, I'll be there.
Ugh.
And it was amazing. And granted, poor Tucker was in a terrible physical state, hadn't slept all night, his back was spasming.
Oh, no.
But he is such a pro and such the warrior. He got up there and he delivered a wonderful performance, so moving. And he talked about, I mean, this man, he was in Vietnam and he was killed in combat, literally died being rolled to the morgue.
No.
And the doctor said, no, bring him back. I got to work on him. There's something tells me I need to do more work.
Oh,
and
my God.
Brought him back to life and recovered, had a long, excruciating recovery in the hospital, and had one of the most touching stories I've ever heard about a nurse who he hadn't eaten in weeks and weeks and weeks because it was throat surgery, and a nurse, he just thought he was going to die of hunger, and this nurse kind of snuck in the middle of the night and gave him a couple spoonfuls of ice cream, and he said it was the most powerful moment of flavor.
That's so beautiful.
The sensory experience. And what was so great about what he chose was that there are a lot of veterans at the Breakfast Club and a lot of nurses at the Breakfast Club. So I am sure that they were so appreciative of that story. And his blues are amazing.
I'm so sad I missed it. I'm so sorry.
Well, next week, this coming Wednesday, is country music. The Autry Museum. They're
Dang
coming.
It. And I don't think I'm going to be able to make it this Wednesday.
Well,
however,
there's always something good. Every
I love
Wednesday.
Country music. I know.
So,
anywho, I'm sorry I missed that, and that sounds so beautiful. And isn't it those little gestures that sometimes make all the difference?
Like
that
really
little ice
does.
Cream.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Absolutely. So, speaking of things that are going on as well in the past couple weeks since our last podcast.
Oh, yes. Tell me everything that you've been doing, Lily Holloman. You're a busy working actor all the time.
Well, I just returned from Eureka, California.
Ooh, Eureka.
Eureka. Where we wrapped a film I've been working on the past couple of months.
Ooh.
Called The Love Witch. And
I love that title, by the way.
Yeah, it is pretty
great.
It's
a great title.
I'm glad you approve.
Yeah, that's the movie I want to see.
Okay. Well, you'll have to see it then.
Well, I will.
Last week we were talking about the opportunities for female directors, which are slim to none. The ACLU is suing Hollywood to try to promote more jobs for women in the director chair. And I got to work with a woman director on this film, Anna Biller. Mm-hmm. This is maybe her third or fourth film, feature film. She shot, it's a period piece set in kind of the 1960s. It's actually set outside of time, styled in the 1960s, 70s, but they have computers and cell phones.
Whoa.
And the rest of the world is going on normally.
That's
and
really
everybody
cool.
within the film is dialed in this extreme way. It was so much fun. She shot on real film.
What?
35 millimeter film, analog sound.
I don't
sound.
Even know what that is.
I barely do either.
All right.
And,
that's
I mean,
fantastic.
Yeah, they had somebody on set with the gloves transporting the film.
Oh my God.
You know, into the case.
And they're going to have to, like, use scissors.
Yes.
If you guys could see me right now, I'm doing improv scissors,
mm-hmm.
by the way.
She's really good
Not
at
the
it.
Bad kind, where you use your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the real, like, I'm actually really holding a pair of scissors.
I was struck by that, Karen. Immediately.
Did you feel scared? Because I was kind of pointing them towards
you. I did, because you weren't doing the Girl Scout way of handing me scissors.
No, I wasn't. I was, like, blade first.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, we're off track and you guys can't even see this.
Anyway, so Anna Biller went to CalArts. She's a CalArts
okay.
graduate
awesome.
Film student, and she is 100% for the art of the matter. There was no concern with money it just seemed like there was no business person on set
That's
saying
awesome.
We need names, we need this to go faster, this, that, and the other thing. It was literally art for art's sake, which was so refreshing.
That is so refreshing.
And so we'll see. I think it'll be
good.
That
is really great. When do you expect that to be done?
Probably a year. We
okay.
just wrapped. And
yeah, that post
it was,
is a killer, man.
Yeah, with real film, who knows? Maybe
oh my,
5 years.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Gonna have to get
But
somebody.
Let me say for a minute, Eureka, California.
Tell
because,
me, where is Eureka?
Whoa. Eureka, California is a five-hour drive north of San Francisco.
Oh, my gosh. Is it near Tahoe at all? No, because Tahoe is only a couple hours north of San
Francisco.
It's
sort of directly north, so it's more on the coast
oh,
side.
Okay. Wow,
and,
this has been beautiful.
You know, that's what I thought. I thought it was going to be.
Uh-oh.
I thought it was
going to
be this quaint town in the script. It's this Victorian town that sounded very sweet and quaint, and I was really expecting the best. And we
I hear a butt coming.
And we arrived, and I was the fresh air was coming in. I was very excited. Humboldt County, and I thought, Humboldt County, where have I heard that before? And then all of a sudden, as we're driving through this dilapidated couple of towns that were seemingly infested by... That's a terribly offensive word to say about homeless people.
Oh, did you say infested? I thought you said invested, and I'm like, oh, invested by homeless people. Well, go
it's
homeless
it's
people.
The homeless people have
invested
in this town a lot
of
in
time.
This town.
Not money,
homeless,
just time.
Vagrants, drug addicts.
Oh,
there's
no.
a prison there.
Well, Humboldt, that's known for
their
marijuana
pot.
Growing.
Their pot. So there's a lot of drugs. There's a lot of,
right.
And it's been, so not only is there modern drugs from the recently released inmates from Eureka, but also San Francisco, the rumor is, they give recently released inmates a bus ticket to Eureka when they're released from prison.
Get the heck out of here. Go
so,
join your homies.
Eureka has
a
huge meth problem. Ugh. And then Arcata, which is also where we shot, which is right next door, is home to also these pandering meth addicts, as well as very old hippies who hitchhiked there. I talked to a guy, he hitchhiked there in 75, and he's only left there a couple times since. And, yeah, you say that with sort of joy in your tone, but I gotta tell you, these people are seconds away from violence.
It's not like, Eureka isn't like a happy exclamation in this case. It's more of a like,
Eureka. They're so aggressive with their welcoming attitude that you feel like they're gonna strangle you at any moment.
That's a terrifying experience.
It's, yeah, so there was a guy who was protesting and ruining our shots. And there was a guy that was playing Peter, Paul, and Mary ruining the sound in our shots.
Oh,
and
God.
I was sitting there waiting for my shot, which was taking longer because of the protester and the guitar player. And I hear this guy go, oh, excuse me, ma'am, you dropped something. And I said, oh, I'm looking around. What did I drop? Your smile. There's nothing I hate worse than somebody, a stranger on the street, telling me to smile.
That is really annoying.
It
but
is.
It sounds that sounds like a not a bad pickup line in the right situation.
I don't think so. It's so controlling. You immediately feel like they want to control you. He
yeah.
said, there's no frowning in California.
Says who? Who made that rule?
This
That's
is
not
the type
the
of
books.
Peace and love that these quote-unquote types of hippies are into. I'm
oh
telling
God.
You, it's...
You dropped your smile. That is that is really funny. I know it wasn't funny to you, but hearing that story, it cracks me up.
I locked eyes and just growled at him.
Good.
Growled.
Don't you dare give him that smile.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Never.
Not happening.
Never tell me to
You're
smile.
Get the worst frown you ever
you
saw,
get
buddy.
A growl.
You will not be smiling when I'm done with you.
Mm-mm.
Oh, well, that sounds like a fascinating, interesting, surprising weekend that you had.
It was quite the place.
Wow.
And I even got stranded there for longer than I wanted to.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
The plane didn't have a tire that was safe.
Only in Eureka. That's going to be our new saying for
they had to wake up the man. It was a 6 a.m. flight. They
oh
had to
God.
Wake up the man who was to study the tire from his home and get him to the airport.
Oh my God.
And then once he was like, yeah, it's not safe, then they said, actually, we don't have a tire here. We have to wait until our third of 3 flights of the day going out of our
oh
airport arrives from San Francisco to bring the tire. And there was a stray cat roaming about the airport.
Moral of the story, guys, no need to visit Eureka ever in your lifetime. Northern California, beautiful. Not Eureka. Don't go there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Mendocino's too far from there, and that is a beautiful place in California to go to, but that's neither here nor there. Well, that's amazing. And I don't have any segue for this. I'm just going to go into it. You guys, Game of Thrones finale. Lily and Phil do not watch the Game of Thrones, which is very distressing to me. All on its own. But there was a finale. It was so intense, so good. It was devastating. I talked about it in my stand-up on Saturday night, and I basically just said I was in mourning all week because of the finale. I was wearing black, castle black, which you would understand if you watched the show. Yeah, it's very, very, very depressing, and I'm in a bit of denial about it. There's been lots of talk. A very beloved character dies. I'm not going to say who it is because I don't want to ruin it, because I really do want you guys to start that show. You will really enjoy it. I want to think that. Because it's so good. Any hootie, devastating. Very, very devastating. But they're so good. That show is so good.
She waved her fist when she said that.
Yeah, I did. It's just such a fantastic show. I mean...
Well, you didn't want to do your stand-up bit that year. Is it too much of a spoiler alert?
I feel like a little bit. Well, okay, yeah. Everybody close your ears for just... This is just how I ended
spoiler
my show.
Alert.
It's very brief. And I don't know. It's kind of weird to do stand-up out of context, but I'll just say what I said. I have... not only am I from Texas, but I'm also not super book smart. And I love poetry. That makes me the perfect candidate to love country music, which I do. And my favorite song right now, what I love about country music, I'm already flubbing this. What I love about country music is it's poetry, but it's poetry I can understand. So, for example, my favorite song right now is called Tequila Makes Her Clothes Fall Off. Right?
Totally
we all get it.
Forward.
Do not have to explain that.
Mm-mm.
And then I said, do you guys know what makes my clothes fall off? And actually, someone answered in the audience the wrong answer, and it really threw me off. But that's okay, because it's good practice to have those things. People actually respond. Well, they said dance, because I have a dance bit about my obsession with dance.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said dance, and I was like, no, but I will add that to the list. I said a hot day when there's a pool nearby, or Jon Snow, but apparently not anymore. Am I right, ladies? Because he was the character that died. So erase that from your memories and watch the show. Just watch it. That's it. Winter is here and it's not leaving ever. It's another Game of Thrones reference that you guys don't understand. Oh,
well, speaking of television,
That was a good segue.
Thanks. We're working on our segues.
We are really
guys.
Working on it. That was a good one, and nobody can say differently about it. Don't challenge us on our segue.
3 weeks ago, back in the days when Dean and
long
time ago, when Dean and Phil were still together, and you
remember
were very
they used to
happy.
Host this show.
That was so cool.
Those were fun days.
We were younger then.
We were a lot younger.
Mm-hmm.
Innocent, if you will.
And we
Green.
Knew it.
Yep.
We relished it.
We did.
Yeah. That's actually a joke that Dean and Phil like to do. So
oh,
I just
okay,
did it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That worked.
Okay. So during a special theme show, Dean and Phil, I've lost my place.
Number
they
seven.
Were talking about their all-time favorite funny ladies of stage and screen.
Oh.
And during that show, Phil said that the advertising in this season of Veep, featuring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her face on Mount Rushmore, was appropriate because, listen to this, if there was a Mount Rushmore of comedy, Julia Louis-Dreyfus would most certainly be on it.
She would totally be on it. I love her so much. And I also want to include, what would be the four ladies on there? On that Mount Rushmore.
Lucille Ball, for
sure. Lucille Ball. Oh, my God. 100%. Carol Burnett.
Carol Burnett, absolutely.
Julia.
That's three.
That's a tough slot.
Like, Tina Fey.
Or Kristen Wiig.
Somebody older. Lily Tomlin.
Oh,
I'm
gosh.
Sorry.
No, she's so amazing.
Yeah, because Julia Louis-Dreyfus is our current, so...
And maybe we should have a bunch of little faces for the fourth face so that we can just include all of our favorites
agree.
In there.
I would
because
have
I don't
want to
have to choose.
Let's not exclude. We're women. We're not about excluding.
No, we're about including.
Our Mount Rushmore is going to be huge.
Oh,
way more
be
than
so
four
huge,
faces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Four faces, my butt. All right, on with Julia
Veep.
Louis and Veep.
Okay, so
which I've
Veep.
Only seen a couple of episodes of.
I just binged watched this last season of Veep. And I gotta tell you, it gets better and better and better.
Such a good show. She's
I can't
so good.
Wait for you to see it.
I know. I've only seen a couple episodes, and I'm ashamed to say that because she is really one of my favorite people.
It's an all-star cast.
Yes, it is.
I particularly enjoy it because I'm from Washington, D.C., so I recognize these characters as being really true and real.
Wow.
And to me, the show is more successful than House of Cards because it really reveals this cluster F that is the U.S. government in a more comedic light.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people would be more willing to listen and laugh at what our government has turned into as opposed to the very serious nature of House of Cards. Now, I love House of Cards.
Don't
get me wrong. Don't get me wrong.
Well, it's a whole different show.
This past season of House of Cards has been a little... A little bit of a snooze fest for me.
Really? I liked it. I love how it ended.
Ooh, don't know. Don't
okay,
know.
Not going to say.
Okay.
I would never have said that, by the way, anyways.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know why.
I feel you.
But I just, for some reason, that's where I would have drawn the line.
But I have to say, Julia Louis-Dreyfus as president is, because they're actually following parallel plot lines. They both, spoiler alert.
That's okay. You can spoil it for me.
They end up assuming president in the same kind of way. And this all-star cast is, they just play off one another in such a subtle, quick, precise way. Anna Chlumsky is amazing. Tony Hale.
I love Tony Hale so much. He's so funny.
There's no words
and what's that guy,
for his
Cole?
Brilliant.
What's his name? Cole something?
Gary Cole.
Yes, I love Gary Cole.
It underplays everything, but is
so
with
good.
It. They're all so present and reactive, and they've become... It went from a workplace comedy to really a family comedy once she became president. Because when in
That's
the
awesome.
First couple of seasons, you feel that tension of, oh, could they get fired? Could they come back? Their jobs are really on the line, and because we've gone through all these seasons, it's like, no, these people aren't going anywhere. They're family, and all these family dynamics play
Unlike
out.
Unlike Game of Thrones, where people, you get attached, and then people freaking die.
Yeah, nobody does.
Sorry, I'm still bitter about
luckily.
It, clearly.
But, yeah, Reed Scott, Timothy Simons, Matt Walsh, Kevin Dunn. they're all amazing.
Well, you're getting me super excited about it, that's for sure.
So go for it. And the cliffhanger at the end, I won't tell you what happens, but it's the perfect ending.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm excited to start my Veep journey.
Mm-hmm.
I love her so much, and I'm like I said, I am ashamed I've never watched it. Speaking, but by the way, women leads in shows. Do you watch Scandal by any chance?
I do not.
Well, I do watch that, and Kerry Washington's great. it's a really entertaining show. That I am kind of, it's a nighttime soap, basically.
Sure.
But, you know, obviously female-driven, as are, like, How to Get Away with Murder is another female-driven show that she does, which I've heard is really good. I have not seen it yet.
Now, does it pass the Bechdel test? Are there often scenes between two women that don't discuss men?
Yes, because that whole show is all about her being a fixer in D.C., so she's often just strategizing on how to fix different situations with there's another woman that she works with, or did used to work for her company, now works for the president. So I don't think that they talk about men. And then there's another woman that's in her employ that she speaks with, and it's all about, just fixing whatever situation there.
I actually have a friend who works at the law firm in Washington, D.C. that is rumored to be based...
No way.
...on, yeah. And that's what she does. She fixes these politicians.
That's fascinating. There's a great SNL sketch that does a spoof of Scandal, which if anyone has not seen it, should watch it. Especially if you watch Scandal, you will very much appreciate it. Because in a lot of ways, it is a ridiculous show. Like, there's just stuff that happens that you're like, what? Say what? But anyways, Lena Dunham's in that that sketch on SNL, if anybody ever gets a chance to look it up.
And you have another TV show that you very much enjoy.
Have you guys seen Broad City? I'm saying you guys, and I mean the people that are listening to this podcast, and I can't even hear the answer. I'm going to wait for it. Nope, silence. But I'm sure some of you said yes. And it's such a great show. It's on Comedy Central, and it's these two UCB chicks who are living in the Big Apple, and they just get into all kinds of funny situations. They're super broke, and they get into, you know, hijinks and lowjinks. Anyways, it's really, really funny, and it's cool too because they're like in their early to mid-20s, which I am not, and I don't find it hard to be fully entertained by that show, even though I'm probably not the target audience, I wouldn't imagine. But they came out of UCB, which is really awesome. And I think Amy Poehler, it's produced by her. So, yeah, it's a really great show.
You mentioned to me something about a scholarship that UCB started.
Yes, this is so awesome. A couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, I don't know, this wonderful woman, her name's Donna Thomas, she started a scholarship at UCB to help... she started it with the people that run UCB in LA to help foster more women sticking with the program. Because I guess, and if you go see shows there, I've taken some classes there, there's not nearly as many women as there are men on the stage. And so they started the scholarship program. I was nominated for it the first year that it started. And people are just nominated from different teachers. And then I went through this interviewing process. I did not get the scholarship, unfortunately, but that would have been so nice. But it was a really fun process. And in the interview, they asked me what my thoughts were on why women don't stick with the UCB program until they get to the performance level. There are, by the way, a lot of women that do, but it's just less than, I don't know, maybe it's like 1-4. Ratio, I have no idea. But I think that partially, I don't know if you agree with this, Lily, but women, generally speaking, we're born with as aggressive or competitive a spirit, or at least it's not fostered in women as we're growing up. Whereas men, it's just such a natural thing that's fostered with sports and, you know, even back in the day with being the hunter-gatherers and all that stuff. So I think that's part of it, because that program does get pretty competitive. And then also, I have noticed some of the shows I've seen have gone, are a little bit blue at points, and, you know, that's obviously not as something that women gravitate towards, I guess, quite as much, I don't think. I'm not saying that I love UCB and I love their shows, but I have seen a handful of shows where men will start going a little blue, and it's just, it's hard. I don't think women feel included when that is being done, and I feel like sometimes I even see the faces of maybe a woman or two that's in that show not knowing really what to do, because it's hard to join in on that.
Well, sometimes. I think there's a certain extent to which you're right about the competitiveness. I'm personally very competitive with myself. Mm. I always want to surpass what I've done before. And I don't like UCB, personally.
Did you take class there?
I've taken a couple classes there, and I was repelled by the whole program because of what you said. And it's less the competitive thing. I can get behind being competitive, but it's this kind of toxic competitiveness that I've noticed there, and this need to be liked, and this intense seriousness about being funny. That isn't enjoyable to me. If you want to be funny, have fun and laugh.
It takes some of the joy out of it when it becomes so...
so serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, and this whole sexuality in comedy thing, it has gone overboard. Obviously, it used to be risque, and Lenny Bruce and George Carlin were really pushing the boundaries with the sexual content in their material. But now it's like, it's so easy, and it's so, it's what everybody talks about. Every time I watch a stand-up special, they always go into pornography. They always have to have some kind of bit about pornography.
That's because a lot of guys watch porn.
It is not funny.
I know, it's not funny at all.
It's so easy, and I'm always so disappointed when it veers in that direction, because there's a gazillion other topics
that are so much more interesting.
And literally, if stand-ups just don't even talk about porn, I think they're amazing.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I do not gravitate towards the blue humor at all.
Just because it's easy. It's not that it's not sometimes funny.
Right. I think it only works for me. I did see this great stand-up at the Hollywood Improv a few months ago. Her name's Annie Letterman, and she does some stuff that's like kind of risque, but it's very genuine to who she is, so it was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time when comics do that, it's not genuine. It's just, like you said, easy, or they think it's funny, or they think it's going to be funny.
Or they think it's going to be a shock value.
Exactly.
Of some kind.
So unless it's super genuine to who you are, I just say, don't do it. And it's true, and the stand-up world, I'm sure everybody knows this, but it's a lot less women than there are men. And it's also a very competitive kind of road, the stand-up road, from what I hear
even
and see.
Even Sarah Silverman, I think her best stuff is when she doesn't talk about pornography.
I know.
Can be blue, and I appreciate that too, because that's her thing. But it's the porn that I'm done with.
No, I'm with you. I love Sarah Silverman.
Me too.
But I prefer the non-blue stuff always in everything.
Yeah, because there's stuff to say.
There's so much more to say.
Mm-hmm.
So much more. Oh, gosh. And also, you're going to connect with more people if you talk about other things.
And speaking of comedy and comedic geniuses, did you get a chance to see A Deadly Adoption, the Will Ferrell, Kristen Wiig Lifetime movie for television on Saturday?
I'm so sad that I was unable to see it because I don't have cable. I tried to watch it on Lifetime.com. It's not available yet. I'm really devastated, but I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it.
Let me tell you, it's becoming clear to me when I review a movie that I like to put things in two categories. It's either art or it's not art. It's made for commercial purposes.
Got it.
This is a work of art from start to finish. Absolutely. And at first, you're watching it, and I didn't really know what to make of it because it was so just straightforward a Lifetime movie. And I thought, I'm going to have to sit through this. This is just a straightforward Lifetime movie. I don't know what I'm going to do.
What's happening? This doesn't make any sense.
It was kind of surreal. And then all of a sudden, I got very invested in the story, as these story tropes often invest you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a word, but...
Well, it's okay. It works for me.
Okay.
Isn't it based on a true story, this movie?
That it said that it's based on a true story.
Okay.
It's probably not. Okay. It's so extreme.
But every Lifetime movie is, so that's probably why they say that.
So it's just a millimeter away from an actual Lifetime movie. And it builds into such extremity. And I was freaked out the whole time. I didn't laugh once.
Oh my
gosh. It wasn't until after the fact that I'm laughing my behind off at everything. At Will Ferrell's toupee, the classic temptation scenes with the homewrecker coming in, with the extreme situation on top of each other and him getting shot twice and then getting in a boat and saving the day even though he's been shot. And
I love it. Oh my gosh. I can't wait to see it.
It's such a meta kind of commentary and homage to this type of movie. And some people don't get it. The Variety reviewer said, well, I don't even understand the point. It's just a Lifetime movie. It is
brilliant.
Pure brilliance.
Oh, I can't wait. Sold.
Celebrity deaths.
So, we are actually wiretapping into the island of Yap. I don't know if you
really
knew this was a surprise thing.
Oh my gosh.
Because there's been some celebrity deaths.
Oh no.
And I can only really address it through Phil Larenas, because there's nothing more sad than when a celebrity dies.
Can I do a shameless plug right before we go to Yap?
Oh, sure.
Guys, I'm super excited about this new web series that I'm a part of, and it's improvised, and it's called Pitch Imperfect. It will be coming out this week, so it's actually not out right this second. But look for it. It's all improvised. It's about two Hollywood writers who make bad pitches for TV shows to an executive, and they also have a very interesting theme song that they claim that they created but clearly didn't.
Okay.
So be on the lookout for that. Now, I'm so sorry to delay the Yap.
Oh, that's okay. We just had a sound cue. Are we doing it again?
Celebrity deaths.
We just had to do another sound cue to be consistent.
To be sure we could get...
with the celebrity deaths. So in from Island of Yap.
We had to bring the room down. Somehow they're getting your feed live down here in the island of Yap.
My gosh.
I say down here, but we're still north of the equator here. My swim tomorrow will take me south of the equator, where it is, of course, the first day of winter right now.
Phil, are you okay out there?
Yes, because...
How are the sharks? That's what's on everyone's mind.
I heard you've been riding a shark.
Well, I've been nothing compared to the meth problem in Eureka. It's nothing compared... And by the way, meth problem, I think, is probably redundant.
That's true.
But they've been fascinated here in the island of Yap by your accounts of dating, of filmmaking, especially the fact that Peter Paul and Mary guitar player in Eureka would be playing Peter Paul and Mary when he actually owned 17 Van Morrison albums.
Wow. Ooh. Way to bring it back.
You know, they have a saying here, down here in the island of Yap, Lily Holloman, for the next time someone tells you, that you lost your smile, you just tell them what the Yapanese say.
You tell them
a frown is just a smile turned upside down, telling you to mind your own fucking business.
Whoa! That was not what
I
was
know that you could curse on this radio station.
I know, because you said butt at one, or bottom.
You said
something bottom off, and I was thinking to myself, I'm so glad she didn't say ass. But now...
This podcast, The Dean and I Have Left in Your Capable Hands, does in fact come with an advisory warning label. It does, actually, on iTunes.
Oh, so wow. That's really
explicit. An explicit.
It's basically like a rap song. So like a really dirty rap song.
But, you know, I'm here because, as we said, winter's about to begin. And of course, Dean and I always cover generally all the school closures due to weather. But also celebrity deaths.
Oh, no.
And some great personages have left us. And Karen Foreman, if you're like me, you always have found it so much more sad when someone in show business dies than a civilian.
That's horrible, Phil.
It is, and that's what I'm saying. It's so horrible.
It's
when
good
they
that
die.
We can. it's good thing that we can commiserate about.
When a celebrity dies, it's almost like two people die. It really is how I feel about it. Jack Rollins, who along with his partner Charles Jaffe, was a famous talent manager, and they absolutely transformed comedy in film and television. Rollins was 100 and died in his Manhattan apartment where he had lived for more than 50 years. And along with his partner, Jaffe, he had managed Woody Allen and executive produced all of Woody Allen's movies. They managed David Letterman and executive produced The Late Night Show at NBC. And even after they sold their agency in 1992, they kept Letterman and Woody Allen as personal clients. I'm a huge fan of Woody Allen's movie, Broadway Danny Rose, and there is a tribute to Jack Rollins in it, where in a deli, there is the Jewish equivalent to the round table of vaunted wits who gathered at the Algonquin Hotel in the early decades of the last century, and these scenes replicated how Rollins, Jaffe, and their crowd would hold court. He was a son of Russian immigrants who grew up in Brooklyn, and who served in India during World War II. So, I mean, he had this amazing life before even going into show business. But his show business career really began when, as a producer on Broadway, he came upon an unknown pop crooner named Harry Belafonte. And in 1951, Rollins told the struggling singer to exploit his West Indies background, his lean good looks, and the natural empathy that gave his singing a deeper edge, all of which was advice that Belafonte took, which led to him almost immediately skyrocketing into stardom, at which point, of course, in true show business fashion, he changed representation. Rollins continued, however, and spotted Mike Nichols and Elaine May, who were making a name for themselves in Greenwich Village night spots, with a gift for improvisation, and he launched them into the stratosphere, along with Woody Allen at the same time, who was a TV gag writer who had hoped to write material for Nichols and May, but Rollins wouldn't let him. He thought otherwise and devoted himself to sculpting the stand-up comic into becoming a writer and director. When Rollins' partner Charles Jaffe expanded their agency to Los Angeles, Rollins nurtured the talent while Jaffe cut the best deals for their clients they could. I mean, just there, you've mentioned Harry Belafonte, Nichols and May, Woody Allen, David Letterman. If that wasn't enough, and by gosh, don't you think it ought to have been, how about legendary boundary breaker who you mentioned earlier, Lily, Lenny Bruce, discovered and represented by Jack Rollins.
True visionary.
Wow. Dick Cavett, Billy Crystal, Robin Williams, Jim Carrey, Joan Rivers, Tony Bennett, Martin Short, Paula Poundstone. I could go on and on and on. Why don't I? Stephen Wright, Andrea Martin, as I said, executive producer of Late Night with David Letterman, until the time when Letterman moved to CBS. But they continued to keep Letterman and Allen, even when they sold their agency, they kept Letterman and Allen as personal clients. And I think somehow it's kind of touching that Jack Rollins would hold on not only to 100, but he would hold on until David Letterman retired.
He gets my artist seal of approval.
We also lost Oscar-winning character actor Ron Moody. Why do we remember Ron Moody, ladies? Trivia. Why? Trivia question. Oscar winner, 1968 for...
A movie.
You remember this one, Lil? You got this right when I asked you before, but it's on the spur of the moment now, and I'm sure the Trans-Pacific connection isn't coming through quite so clearly. He played Fagin in Oliver.
Oh, yeah.
He died at 91, and boy, he wasn't only Fagin. He had appeared in the long-running EastEnders as Edwin Caldecott. He played Merlin in Disney's A Kid in King Arthur's Court. But boy, Fagin was a major part of his career. He played Fagin on the West End, played Fagin on Broadway before doing the movie. And it's interesting because he said he turned down quite a few offers afterwards because he thought the people didn't come close to the quality of the people he worked with on Oliver.
Aww.
And then, as he added, which in retrospect was a mistake. The actor famously said his biggest regret was turning down an opportunity to become one of the incarnations of the Doctor in Doctor Who. His lengthy career, which especially found its apex on stage, saw him play Captain Hook 5 times, Uriah Heep in David Copperfield, and the title role in Sherlock Holmes, the musical. Now, I know what you're asking me. You're asking me, please, sir, can I have some more? Well, not from Ron Moody, because he's dead, but there are more deaths to recount, one of whom is one of the seminal villains of all time on the big screen, Christopher Lee, who played Dracula. Ooh. He played the titular bad guy in the James Bond thriller, The Man with the Golden Gun. He played the deliciously evil wizard Saruman in the Lord of the Ring films. And he was the dude who fought Yoda with a lightsaber in Star Wars Attack of the Clones. Dies at 93 after having made more than 150 movies, beginning in 1948, stretching into this decade. Initially made his name in horror films. As I mentioned, he played Dracula in Britain's Hammer Film Studios productions. One of my favorites, though, and apparently it was his favorite, was he plays this really scary guy, Lord Summerisle, in the cult classic The Wicker Man, which was remade as a terribly unscary movie starring Nicolas Cage. But the original is still to this day so scary. Christopher Lee was knighted in 2009, fittingly on the day before Halloween, for his accomplishments in the arts. And 2 years later, the British Academy of Film and Television Arts awarded Lee its highest honor, the Academy Fellowship. In 2011, Lee said that he always wanted to bring something unexpected to his roles. He said, "One thing to me is very important. If you're playing somebody that the audience regards as, let's say, evil, try to do something they don't expect. Try to do something that surprises the audience." In the last few years of his life, he did just that for many of his fans as he turned to a heavy metal music career, releasing the holiday albums A Heavy Metal Christmas and A Heavy Metal Christmas 2 in 2012 and 2013, endearing himself to yet another legion of fans. So that is, I guess, what we could term our celebrity deaths. Someone that I would like to celebrate, though, although he may not be a household name, is someone that I worked with. And I guess I should begin this story by saying that on March 8th, I wrote an email to Neil Kinsella, who was an assistant director with whom it had been my great pleasure to work on a handful of Lifetime movies. I often directed second unit on these Lifetime movies, and Neil was often the first unit assistant director, or occasionally, to my great pleasure, my own assistant director on second unit. And Lily and I ran into Neil at a screening of a film called Dirty, which is the feature directorial debut of a protege of Neil's and my first AD on The Ladykillers, which Lily and I recently finished. And Neil actually acts in the film. And so I wrote to him with the subject heading, "Kudos and great seeing you. Dear Neil, great seeing you at Daniel Ringey's screening. Sorry I ran off without saying goodbye. It had been a long, exhausting day. Nevertheless, I wanted to let you know that we were both incredibly impressed with your performance. Truly. My Lady Lily is a very accomplished and in-demand actress, and she didn't know that I knew you. But as soon as you came on screen, the film became very interesting to her. No fooling. She really thought you grounded your performance in something interesting. So, there you go. Hope all is well and that our paths will cross soon. All the best, Phil. More than 2 months passed by, and on May 30th, I received this reply to that email. Dear Phil, my name is Matthew, and I am Neil Kinsella's brother. I am so sorry to inform you that Neil has passed away due to complications from his bout with cancer. The message you sent was the source of great pride to him, and he shared it with all his family members. Thank you so much for shining a bright light on him when he wasn't in the best place in his life. Gratefully, Matthew Kinsella, Neil's little brother. Neil cut his teeth in television as an AD on the series Tales from the Dark Side and Pee-wee's Playhouse. Mm. The guy was the AD for Pee-wee, for crying out loud. And he did just about everything you can do in independent cinema and television movies. I sincerely always enjoyed seeing Neil. I never was quite sure, actually, to be honest, if he liked me. And yet he was one, and I think it's because he's one of these people that I really did want to have like me. So it always put me in this place of vulnerability in which I'm not used to being or too comfortable actually caring whether someone likes me. But I always got a kick out of seeing him, and I really looked forward to getting to work with him again sometime, and I am really grateful that Matthew reached out to me. I have yet to reach back, as I haven't known what to say. But I do know that if you have a desire to express admiration for someone, especially if it's admiration for the thing that they're not usually known for or recognized for, do it. Sometimes people won't receive it, but you never know when you just might make someone's day, especially when they're going through a rough patch.
That was very moving.
Very moving. You never know. You never, ever know.
Yeah, you really don't know what the effect you can have on people.
And that was, he did have an incredible performance. He was so real and so interesting and so contrary to the type of people you see in movies. And I am always so excited to see anybody out of the ordinary on screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, kids, that brings us to the end of this installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. All 423 episodes are available for your listening pleasure on Blog Talk Radio and at chillpackhollywood.com. That's pack with just a K. There's no C in there. Continue to enjoy every new episode on iTunes, Stitcher, and through our friends at fanboynation.com. As always, your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour is brought to you by the largest independently owned gas station chain in the northeastern United States. Empire State Gas. It's not only fun and easy to use, it's organically grown. Empire State Gas, from farm to pump. We've got great gas.
You can like your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour at facebook.com/chillpackhollywood. Follow us on Twitter at Dean and Phil, all written out. Write us at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. And guess what? Dean and Phil will be back the next 2 weeks with a special two-part episode bound to delight all the X-Files out there. We will return in 3 weeks with what is supposed to be our final guest hosting assignment, so until then...
Ladies and gentlemen, we rest our case.
The jury
it's in
has
your
settled.
Hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have had... This has been a real pleasure... Always mm-hmm. love chatting and getting to know Miss Lily because we are new friends. So I learn something new every time, and it's a joy.
It's so exciting, isn't it?
It really is.
Good. Well,
have a great week.
And would you like to say something?
No, that's really all I have to
say. I mean, catchphrase-wise?
Am I right, ladies?
Mm.
That's my stand-up catchphrase, in case you probably heard it in the beginning. Any hootie.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Historic building in downtown Los Angeles. In a historic building in downtown Los Angeles.
Am I right, ladies?